Welcome into a fresh episode of Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. Thanks for checking in this week. It is the second week in February, so of course we had Super Bowl last week. We've got the Winter Olympics starting this week. We've already had a lot of action in the NBA this week and some trades going on. Some big names changing teams and uniforms, but a lot of them staying pat where they are. In the Northwest or in Portland specifically, maybe not as much action as people would like to have seen, but still quite a bit going on the radar. The Blazers, the only move they really made, well, the only one they made, was they got rid of Noah Vonleh, sent him to Chicago, and in return, they get the draft rights to a guy they're probably never going to see in uniform. He's 32 years old. He's never played in the NBA. I wouldn't imagine that we're ever going to see him over here. And, you know, even if we did, I don't know if he was someone that you could even really think about using. It's unlikely that someone in their early to mid-30s is going to learn a whole new way of playing basketball and get comfortable, especially a big man. If you look at it, you go, okay, you get a guy who's a proven star over in Europe, but here we're not so sure what they would be capable of. They're a little bit older. They haven't played here before. They haven't played in this style of game before. I'd be nervous about that. So, you know, it's an interesting move because you basically get some cash back for Noah Vonleh. It's really what you get. I don't know why you need to throw in draft rights to a player. Then the Bulls, I guess, needed to send somebody. But it's just interesting. I guess I really expected Neil Olshey to do a little bit more, something with a little more punch to it than this, but it was still a good move. I get why he's doing it. He's freeing up some salary cap space, which the Blazers definitely needed to do. But was it enough? Because, you know, they're going into the All-Star break. They've got three more games before that, but they're going into the All-Star break with just over a 500 record. I don't know that they've got the roster that can beat a team in the playoffs right now. Getting rid of Vonleh definitely doesn't help. So now you're a player down. You know that Swanigan and Collins are not ready for postseason play. They're barely ready for regular season play. You don't know if Nurkic is ever going to get back to the level he was at last March. We hope he will, but you don't know that. You've got Ed Davis, who's playing really well, but he's just not been a guy you can count on to be next level when it counts. And that's, you know, that's your front court, really. I mean, you've got Myers Leonard. You don't have Noah Vonleh anymore. You have Al-Farouq Aminu, but he's better served as a small forward. You know, he doesn't really work as a power forward. I hate to say it. So that, you know, that's your rotation, really. You know, Yusuf Nurkic, if he can take a big step forward, great, but I just don't see that happening. You know, we've seen enough from him this season to realize that the outlier was last season. It wasn't everything before. It's not everything after. He's above average, but he's not a superstar. So, and the big problem is that he's going to be owed a mega contract by somebody next year. It's maybe Portland, maybe not, but it was really interesting because there were some pundits that thought that he should be the one that gets dealt, but I kind of wonder how many other teams in the league are really that interested. I mean, he's not a bad player. He's a really good player, but I don't know that he's going to be worth the amount of money that he's probably going to demand, which, you know, sounds funny saying that out loud, because you don't necessarily say a guy is okay, but he's worth $1 billion. And it's just weird because in the NBA, that's how it goes. Guys that probably shouldn't make anywhere near the amount of money they are, they're making that kind of money or more. It's a little absurd these days with the amount of dollars getting thrown around, but it is what it is. The Blazers beat Charlotte most recently. They've also got Sacramento, Utah, and Golden State coming up before the All-Star break. I guess I'm just curious, you know, if you're a Blazer fan, are you excited for this year, for this postseason coming up in April? Is this a team you think can win a playoff series, another one? I don't know that they can get out of the first round. You know, they're unlikely to draw Golden State, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're getting out. I mean, Houston's right there. Minnesota's going to be right there. San Antonio's going to be right there. There's a lot of really good teams in the West. Oklahoma City. It's going to be tough to really see them getting out of the first round. Even if they do, you know, then what? They've still got to beat the teams I just mentioned, and they got to do it over 7 games. I don't know that I buy that this roster can get that done. They don't, you know, they just lost one of their key rotation guys for nothing. So, you know, it looks better on the books if you're looking at the books, but from the roster and game plan standpoint, I don't know how they improved through this. So, a little bizarre. Around the rest of the trades, Cleveland definitely cleaned up. They got a lot for a little. That's a really easy way to say it. They traded away Derrick Rose, Isaiah Thomas, and Dwayne Wade. Sorry, Dwayne Wade, you're the afterthought these days. You know, the Flash never used to be, but these days it's just he's another guy. They got rid of them. They also got rid of Channing Frye, and they got Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance Jr. from the Lakers. They only had to give up their own 2018 first-round pick for this year. They still have that protected Brooklyn pick that's probably going to be a lottery pick. They send Dwayne Wade to Miami, so he'll be home in Miami, I guess if that's where you're calling home. And they get a second-round pick for that. And then in another trade between the Cavs, the Jazz, and the Kings, the Cavs get Rodney Hood and George Hill. They trade away Derrick Rose and Jay Crowder. And the Kings, so that Utah gets Derrick Rose and Jay Crowder. And then the Kings get Joe Johnson, Iman Shumpert, and a 2020 second-round pick from Miami. I mean, if you're a Cavs fan, you're all for this. If you're one of the other four teams involved, I think if you're a fan of that team, you're going, what the hell? How does this help us? You know, if you're the Lakers, how does getting a really broken-down Isaiah Thomas benefit you? How does getting rid of Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance benefit you? I don't know that it does. And, you know, you get Isaiah Thomas, who he's had a couple of really good years. I don't want to take anything away from what he's done. But it's unlikely that he's going to do anything for you this year or next year. Unlikely. And now you've got Channing Frye, who I don't know what you do with that. I mean, the guy is way past his prime. He's been, you know, like another Robert Horry. But Robert Horry at least hung it up before he turned 50. And I'm not sure if Channing Frye is getting anywhere near that. But he sure seems like he has. I mean, he was... Don't forget that he was playing for Portland when Brandon Roy was there. So, you know, that's not ages ago, but it sure feels like it. I mean, that's 7 or 8 years ago. So keep that in mind that, you know, what is LA supposed to do with that? They've got a guy that's basically a veteran bench warmer. That's all he really is. And, you know, Utah, I don't see how this benefits them. They lose George Hill. They lose Rodney Hood. They really, you know, they get Derrick Rose and Jay Crowder. Jay Crowder, I get, you know, because you've got to somehow fill the void that Gordon Hayward left when he left last year. I don't know that Jay Crowder is going to do that for you. And Derrick Rose, you know, now you've got Derrick Rose who can't stay on the court. When he can, he's not effective. And you've got Ricky Rubio who, when he's on the court, he's not effective. He'll have nights that he's on. He had one this week, but he's got a lot that he doesn't. And I'm pretty sure the guy is showing up to the game wearing makeup, so I'm not sure what that's all about. And the Kings, I don't know what to read into this because they've got a roster full of young talent, and now you get an influx of veterans you don't really need, like Joe Johnson, who just ought to retire. He's been past his prime since he left Atlanta eons ago, and you've got Shumpert, who just never quite arrived, and I'm not really sure what Sacramento's doing there. They basically get two players they are probably going to cut or just bench for the rest of the season and a pick that, you know, it's a second rounder. It's basically a free agent in basketball. You know, anything outside the top 10 in the first round is basically you're signing up for free agency. I don't know how this benefits them, but that's what they did. And, you know, if you're a fan of those teams, maybe you can explain it to me how this benefits you, but I don't get it. Toronto traded they get Malachi Richardson from Sacramento, who gets Bruno Caboclo, I guess how you pronounce it. Brooklyn gets Dante Cunningham for New Orleans in exchange for Rashad Vaughn. And the Suns get Elfrid Payton for a 2018 pick. So Orlando sending away their starting point guard to get another pick, which, again, second rounder, don't know what that means to you. To me, it means very little. So the other big trade today was the New York Knicks. Denver Nuggets and Dallas Mavericks were involved in a deal. The Knicks are going to get Emmanuel Mudiay, and the Nuggets are going to get Devin Harris, and then Dallas gets Doug McDermott. who you may remember from Creighton from a couple years ago. He's been collecting dust around the league, and we'll see if he can do anything in there. The Nuggets are also going to get a second-round pick, and the Mavericks are going to get a second-round pick. So a lot of second-rounders going around, and I don't know if that's just the MO this time of year, is that they don't want to trade first-rounders. You know, Cleveland gave up theirs, but, you know, they're going to have a late-round pick. Even if they don't make it all the way to the finals, they're going to be one of the later teams to go out. So I don't know how this benefits anybody to get their pick, but, you know, maybe it's one of those things you just kind of go throw it on and go, yeah, you know, here, you can have this too. So at a very eventful day in the trade deadline, but not necessarily the one you wanted to have if you were in Portland. You know, you were probably hoping that somehow Olshay was going to pull off a blockbuster and bring you, you know, the Greek Freak would have been way out of his range. There's not really anyone in Portland, you know, sorry to say this, but there's not anyone in Portland 1-for-1 or even 2-for-1 that you could get to go to Milwaukee and bring the Greek Freak here, even though that's probably what they need. Is, you know, he's the closest thing to a Kevin Durant or a LeBron James around the league that you could go in and grab and have on your roster and build around and compete with the Warriors. So short of doing that, I don't know what he was going to do. I really was hoping that Nick Batum would be in trade talks, because I feel like that's a guy that the Blazers have been sorely missing since he left. I really thought when they drafted Rondae Hollis-Jefferson after they traded Batum that was going to be a nice fit, and he's actually had a pretty nice little career in the last couple of years, but it's been in Brooklyn, not in Portland. And Batum has kind of fizzled out in Charlotte. He's still a really strong player, and I don't know why they want to trade him. I think they're just trying to get some of their pieces moved around and get some younger players in. I mean, Batum is not an old man by any stretch, but in the NBA, he is getting up there. And he hasn't shown he can stay healthy for long stretches. I mean, he's had a pretty good last couple of years, but over his career, not the most stable guy as far as consistency goes. But he is one of the best defenders in the league, and he's a really nice stretch three, stretch four. He can play a few different positions. He can play the two, play the three, play the four if you need him to. And he can defend some of the best players in the NBA, and that's something the Blazers are missing. They thought they had that with Harkless. They're just not getting it. They thought they had that with Aminu. Again, they're just not getting it. And Neil Olshay just seems content to overpay anybody that will come his way. So I guess we're trading away the Vonleys of the world, which, by the way, we got Vonley in exchange for Batum a few years ago. So from what I'm hearing is that Batum is worth some 32-year-old from Europe that's never going to play in the NBA. I don't understand what Neil Olshay is doing. You know, obviously he's well above my pay grade, but you have to wonder, it's been a few years now, is this what we're going to get? You know, is the Blazers, are they just going to continue to stay stuck in NBA purgatory and have a roster that's good enough to compete and good enough to get into the playoffs, but not anywhere beyond that? But they're also, they don't stink enough to get a really good draft pick and get a blue chip player that can really help them out down the road. You hear a lot of talk and a lot of chatter about, you know, CJ and Dame are going to recruit guys and get people here, but, you know, we've kind of heard that. And part of this season was going to be they were going to show people what they were capable of with Yusuf Nurkic healthy, and I don't believe that they've done that to the point that other players around the league are going to want to start coming to Portland. I think you got to win a couple playoff series and get their attention. You started doing that when LaMarcus was still here. Couldn't do enough to keep him around. I get that. And honestly, when he left, I was one of the few in Portland, I think, that were kind of relieved that he was finally out, because he had talked about it for so long, even though he hadn't really talked about it. He had dropped hints here and there that he wasn't quite happy, and you knew he wasn't. So it was good for him and the team to break away and go their separate ways. But has it worked out for Portland in the long run? No, they aren't any farther along than they were when he left. Damian's getting closer and closer to being in his prime and past his prime. CJ's right behind him. You know, Yusuf Nurkic is a few years younger than he is, than either of them, so he's got some time. But you kind of wonder, are we seeing his best, or is his best still yet to come? You've got Zach Collins, who's probably at least a year or two away from showing us what he's really got. And by then, will it be too late? I don't know. that's the real question, is in 2 to 3 years, can the Blazers be in the finals with a really dominant Zach Collins and a dominant Damian Lillard and a dominant CJ McCollum and hopefully a serviceable use of Nurkic, as long as he can A, stay healthy, and B, prove that he is a, not only an above-average center, but a star player in the league. And that's going to be a huge controversy this offseason, because they're going to owe him a lot of money if other teams are interested, and I think they will be. The market for a big man is always seemingly ridiculous. They'll overpay for it because they don't want to be the one stuck not risking it and then finding out that they didn't get the guy they should have had all along. But, you know, that would be Portland's luck to find out that he's not worth what they think he's worth, or worse, they don't pay him what they think that he's actually worth, and then he goes somewhere else and has an amazing career. I mean, can you imagine if he signed with LA and they got Paul George and have to watch that? I don't want to see it, but I could see the, you know, the Lakers, they seem to be the Cleveland Browns of centers lately. I mean, they went from Roy Hibbert to Timofey Mozgov to now they have Brook Lopez, and who knows what they're going to have next. They just seem to keep going, burning through centers that aren't very good and hoping that they'll be serviceable, and it's just not working. I don't know if they're going to try to draft somebody or trade for somebody or if they're going to try to sign someone in the summer, but they definitely have some work to do in the front court. But then the Blazers, they really do also. I mean, even if Collins pans out in a couple years, if Nurkic does not, you don't have a center to throw on the court. You know, Ed Davis is good now, but he's not a center. He's a power forward. Noah Vonleh was a power forward. Myers Leonard's a power forward. Zach Collins a power forward. Swanigan's a power forward. You have all these power forwards. You really don't have a true center. You've got Nurkic, who you really like and you think is your true center, but he's kind of proven to you that he's not consistent, and that's okay. You know, Kevin Duckworth wasn't consistent either. He wasn't this dominant, amazing center. He was really, really good, and everybody loved him, and it's really tragic that he's not with us anymore, but you take Buck Williams out of that equation, I'm not sure how good Kevin Duckworth looks. I mean, you saw how he performed in the 92-93 seasons, and it wasn't hard for Portland to cut ties with him because he got out of shape, for one, and he also just couldn't hack it with the rest of the league anymore, and he wasn't that old. I mean, he was only in his late 20s, early 30s. It wasn't like he was an old man all of a sudden. His conditioning got out of whack, and he also just wasn't able to keep up with the rest of the league the way they were keeping up with him. You saw that with Shaq as he got older. I mean, it happened to Duckworth a lot faster than it happened to Shaq. But you see that with these bigger guys, and, you know, Nurkic is only 22 going on 23, but, you know, we're kind of seeing what we're going to see from him. We saw it in Denver. Now we're seeing it here. I don't know. I don't know if he's worth a mega deal. I guess we'll find out. You know, we know Olshay likes to spend Paul Allen's money. And before that, he liked to spend Donald Sterling's money. And it just seems like wherever he goes as GM, he just likes to spend money and have these bloated contracts. And then, you know, they're still cleaning up the mess he made in L.A. That's no joke. They're still paying out some of the contracts he signed up there. That's how crazy it is. And it is what it is, and the Blazers will live and die with it, but it's just kind of crazy that this could come out to, you know, can they even afford to re-sign Damian Lillard or CJ McCollum? You know, they've got Evan Turner, who's locked in for a couple more years. He's on a pretty big deal. They've got Mo Harkless and Myers Leonard, who are, you know, it's funny that we thought these were going to be average deals a couple years ago, and now we're looking at them going, what were we thinking? Well, the salary cap was supposed to be bloated and inflated and crazy and huge, and instead, it's just average. And so now these contracts that were supposed to be pennies on the dollar are dollars on the penny. And it's just not working. And you don't, you know, even if we stretch our imagination and think that someone like a Paul George would opt to come to Portland instead of somewhere else, like in LA, or stay in Oklahoma City, you know, what's the draw? And even if you can draw him here, what are you paying him? And what are you paying him with? Because Paul Allen said that he's willing to pay the money to have a championship contender, but my God, you'd be so high over the hard cap, you'd be so far into the luxury cap that you'd probably be paying more luxury cap than actually salary dollars at that point. I mean, that's not what it's going to be. That's an exaggeration. But for the amount of money the Blazers are paying, they ought to have the dream team. And they don't. They have this team that's hovering over 500. They're a playoff bubble team. They're probably going to get in. They're probably going to compete in the first round, and then that's it. And that's been their story for quite some time. Since the early 2000s, actually. You know, before 2013, they hadn't even won a playoff series in about 12 to 13 years. And, you know, that was a really rough stretch. But at least during those stretches, you knew what you had. Whereas now, you kind of wonder every year, what do we have? What are we making? This trade deadline, it came and went. It's Friday tomorrow, and we'll see what's in store. But, you know, this is the roster we're going to have the rest of the season. I'm just not sure what they're going to do with it. But, you know, they'll show us what they've got, and they're always a little more impressive than we give them credit for. But at the end of the day, if you're hoping for the Blazers to compete for their first title since 77, I don't think it's going to happen in 2018. So keep that in mind. Keep your expectations level, and we'll just see what happens. Super Bowl happened last week, and I'm sure some of you watched it, and there were also some tight ads in there. I don't know if you caught any of those, but they were pretty good. Really need to see Hopper from Stranger Things getting some more screen time, and it was really fun to see different commercials. You think they're one thing, and then it turned like there was an Old Spice one that turned out to be a Tide commercial. That was pretty neat. And it's just, you know, it's nice to see some creative marketing for once. You get so many vanilla commercials out there now that it's nice to see somebody really trying to play with your mind a little bit while you're watching commercials. Because, I mean, I'll be honest, most of the time I don't watch commercials if I can avoid it. Live sports is really the only time that it happens. If it's a show, I probably recorded it, or I'm streaming it on Netflix or on Amazon Prime. It's probably, or it's on demand on Xfinity. It's probably not something that I'm watching live just because I've got nothing better to do. So kudos to them for coming up with creative commercials that, you know, made me want to see the next commercial. I usually don't say that, but it made me want to watch the next one, not just in the Super Bowl, but in general. So I was just curious, you know, how far can they keep this going? How many Tide ads can they really have? And it was just a really cool premise to see them go, you know, if you see someone wearing clean clothes, that's a Tide ad. And I thought, you know, there's something to that, but you got to still market it. So it's just interesting to see them go that way. As far as the actual game, I was really hoping Philadelphia would pull this off. Not just because I thought it'd be neat for them to become one of the few franchises, to leave the table of the few franchises that are remaining that do not have a title. But, you know, the third time's the charm. I really like that. They went there in 80, they went there in 03, or sorry, in 04, and now they're back in 2018, and they do it with a backup quarterback, and they do it with winning against Tom Brady, who was a backup quarterback, technically, when he won his first one in 01. They get to beat the dynasty that no one thought was really going to lose this year. You know, if you recall going into the preseason, people were saying Patriots were going to go 16-0. They had revamped on offense and defense. This team was going to be unbeatable. They definitely showed some issues throughout the season and in the playoffs, and they barely survived against Jacksonville. And then here come the Eagles, and everyone's thinking, you know, yeah, they're good but not great. They're above average but not spectacular. They have a quarterback who can get the job done, but he's, you know, he's not Carson Wentz. And maybe if Wentz was there, this game would have been even better. But who knows? Because, I mean, Nick Foles played a hell of a game. Hats off to him. I didn't expect him to play a great game. I thought that he would just kind of go out there and game manage. But to his credit, I mean, the guy played a hell of a game. The run-pass option definitely benefited him. Kudos to Doug Peterson for implementing that as much as possible, because if they had tried to run just a pro system, I think this is an easy win for Brady and Belichick and collecting ring number 6. It's just kind of nuts that, you know, Tom Brady's career has gotten to the point where we kind of feel bad for him that he didn't get a 6th Super Bowl. It's like, what more did you need? You know, do you not, you know, some of the internet memes were coming around saying that his hurt right hand was because they had to surgically add a 6th finger so he could hold all the rings on one hand. It's like, come on, you know, how many times do we need to see him in the AFC Championship and in the Super Bowl and winning the Super Bowl or losing the Super Bowl or winning the Super Bowl or letting this? It's like the last 17 years on some level have been Tom Brady playing football in this AFC Championship or the Super Bowl or a combination of both, which is crazy. You know, you think about how long Joe Montana played, or how long Dan Marino played, or how long Peyton Manning played, or Brett Favre, or all these guys, None of them played in the amount of championship games and Super Bowls that Brady has. It's ridiculous. And here comes Nick Foles, who is basically this year's Jeff Hostetler, who, you know, if you don't know that name, Google it and watch some videos, because you're going to see Belichick on the Giants and seeing what that looked like in the 80s. And, you know, a little shameless plug for ESPN there. If you haven't watched the two Bills, the newest 30 for 30, go check it out. It's incredible. But you've got Nick Foles, Jeff Hostetler, and Trent Dilfer, who are all Super Bowl champions. And we can't fix that. I mean, there are guys that are going to win that probably, you know, Joe Flacco is another one that you're probably never going to see him win another one. I don't know if he deserves to be starting at this point. He's had such a bad last few seasons. I mean, I know he had some injury struggles, but come on, the guy's never been elite. It's not a joke. It's true. He's never been elite. He was for 1 year, and, you know, that was the outlier. It's like Matt Ryan. You look at last season, he's the MVP. He's shocking the world. Well, he was pretty average this season, and he only played two playoff games this year. They didn't look at the same team. You know, it's funny because I don't remember anybody on his offense leaving, just his play caller. And it's just interesting because for a guy that's that good, you'd think that he'd be able to make stuff happen with or without the good plays. And I know that that sounds harsh because we don't say that about Tom Brady. We don't say that about Aaron Rodgers. But I would think that those guys would influence the play calling. You know, I highly doubt that Steve Sarkisian was calling plays that Matt Ryan hates. I think it's just the difference is that Kyle Shanahan is so good at opening things up that you don't necessarily need to do a lot. You just got to take what the defense gives you. With Steve Sarkisian, though, I think that it's a little different, that he's going to call a little more traditional plays and you've got to really work for it. We've seen Tom Brady play with different play callers and he's still been successful. Now, granted, he's been most successful with Josh McDaniels, but he's still been really good with whoever's calling the plays. When he had Bill O'Brien, he was still really good. They just changed the scheme a little bit, but he still put up crazy numbers and crazy success. He didn't win any Super Bowls, but so what? You know, he can still be a spectacular quarterback and not win Super Bowls. There's a lot of them. But the real question is, you know, Nick Foles, is this the guy that we're going to see from now on? You know, he did really a whole lot of nothing since 2013 and then comes out of left field to play well in the last two games of the season, the NFC Championship and the Super Bowl. He did not have a good end of the regular season. His first playoff game against Atlanta was just okay. And then he comes out with two barn burners in the NFC Championship and the Super Bowl that are just nuts. And one was against Minnesota, so you know he can carve up a real defense. And the other was against the Patriots, who, you know, I guess you can call that a defense. I wouldn't, but that is what you would probably call it. But should he be MVP? Does Foles deserve it? Because, you know, without Brady getting sacked, which it's interesting that Brady gets sacked and fumbles, and it happens to him by a guy who went to Michigan and who led his team in sacks throughout the season, but only had two forced fumbles the whole season, but then he has a sack fumble in the Super Bowl to basically clinch the game or ice the game. And it just makes you think, you know, this has all come full circle. Like, Tom Brady's losing to the backup quarterback who was taken over for an injured starter, which is what happened to Brady. He took over Drew Bledsoe when he got hurt and led them to the Super Bowl. You wouldn't necessarily say the Eagles are winning because of Nick Foles, but you can't say that they're not winning because of Nick Foles, which is the same thing you'd have to say about the Patriots in 0-1. And the guy that sacks Brady is from Michigan, which happened in the Tuck Rule game. Charles Woodson sacked Brady and caused a fumble, which they called the Tuck Rule. And here we are in 2018. It's all come full circle. Brady is back in the Super Bowl. Now, obviously, those were a lot of different things that happened outside of the Super Bowl, so it's not necessarily, you know, I'm cherry-picking things to make it work, but it is really interesting to see those parallels because, you know, we don't know. Have we seen the last of Brady? You know, Josh McDaniels is staying, but Matt Patricia's leaving. It's kind of funny because the Patriots defense has not been very good in a long time, since probably Teddy Bruschi retired. And they lost Rodney Harrison, and they lost Tyrone Poole and Ty Law and Mike Vrabel and Willie McGinnis and Richard Pryor. Or not Richard Pryor. I'm blanking on the guy's name, but he's a really great defensive end. But you have all these guys that, you know, aren't there anymore, and they never really rebuilt that defense. They tried. You know, they had Dont'a Hightower, and they had Jerod Mayo and Chandler Jones, and it really looked like they were coming along there for a while. But it, for whatever reason, they just have not been able to be a really good cohesive unit in a long time. And part of that's because their offense scores really quick, and so they're on the field a lot. And the other part is that they just they haven't had a good draft in a while. And it's interesting because, you know, they stockpile draft picks, so they just don't seem to get these key guys that they could probably have. You know, you look at Richard Sherman, Patriots could have had him. Bobby Wagner could have had him. KJ Wright could have had him. Those were all guys that were drafted in the second, third, fourth, fifth round, and the Patriots passed on them. And how crazy would it be if any of those guys were in New England now? So, just interesting. So Nick Foles, he's the MVP. It's really interesting because if Brady doesn't get sack fumbled on their last drive, or second to last drive, sorry, does Foles still win the MVP? I guess I'm a little confused on what the MVP is, because it should be the most valuable player. It shouldn't be the most valuable player of the winning team, because if your performance transcends whether you won or lost the game, that's what should matter the most. And Tom Brady had the most passing yards in Super Bowl history. Threw for three touchdowns. He didn't have a single, you know, he had that one fumble, but he didn't have a pick. And he was playing without his top receiver. Brandon Cooks was lost in the first half to a head injury, and maybe it should have been a penalty. Maybe it shouldn't have. I don't know. And it's just interesting. You know, I'm really glad the Eagles won. I was rooting for them, but I do kind of find it strange that we're so quick to celebrate the team that won and give them all the awards. You know, there's only been one player that ever won the MVP for the losing team in the Super Bowl. I think that's kind of odd. It's like when LeBron James outplays everybody in the series, but he doesn't win the MVP because his team didn't win. I find that kind of odd. You know, if the best player is the most valuable player, give him the dang trophy. You know, you can't give him the championship, but give him the trophy. And, you know, Philly special, that play, that was amazing. It's kind of funny that New England ran a similar version of it, just a drive or two before that, and then, you know, the Eagles go back and use it against them, and Foles is the hero there, catches a touchdown, throws for a couple more. You know, he had an amazing game. I feel like he had a better supporting cast around him by the end. You know, Brady was throwing to Hogan a lot, throwing to Amendola a lot, throwing to James White, throwing to Deion Lewis, throwing to Gronkowski. There's only one drive where you only saw Brady forcing the ball to Gronk, and that was where they got the touchdown in the third quarter. I feel like Brady just spread the ball around a little bit more, and I think it's funny because a lot of people are coming out now and saying, you know, what can the Eagles get for Nick Foles now, or should they be smart and keep him? And I'm sitting there going, proving it wrong, but this guy has a two-game season he's showing you. The rest of his career has been so-so. I don't think that he's all of a sudden turned over a new leaf and he's a new quarterback. So careful what you pay him. It's just like Case Keenum in Minnesota. You know, careful what you pay him. I don't think you're getting the same production next year, even though, you know, look at the set. Check the numbers. They're not that great. This isn't like all-pro numbers. These are okay numbers. He game managed more often than not. Check it out. Favorite commercial, for me, it was probably all the Tide commercials. I really liked the Peyton Manning and Universal one. Tyrion Lannister showing off his rap skills in the Doritos / Mountain Dew commercial with Morgan Freeman. That was really neat. I'm curious what yours are. Make sure you comment on the show. What'd you think of the halftime show? After my seizure from the Laser Light show, I thought it was pretty good. You know, JT is always a good show, but would have been cool if they could have figured out a way for him to perform with the hologram from Prince. I think that would have been really neat if they had had Prince on stage with him somehow. That would have been really cool. My partner in crime, Bryant Knox, is not able to be here tonight, but just shout out to him. You know, thanks for all your help on the show the last few weeks. It's been awesome. Also, Bryant finished 4-7 in playoff picks. I was a humble 5-6, so neither of us could actually put up a winning record, but it was a lot of fun to try. You know, we'll just see what we can do next year. And on the prop bets, we pretty much split it. It was pretty interesting because, you know, they asked you stuff about, was it, you know, who's going to win the coin toss? What are they going to do if they win it? Who's going to score first? Who's going to score last? You know, who's going to get MVP? Is there going to be a defensive touchdown? You know, it's just, it's so much stuff that I'm surprised people throw money at it, because it's basically a roll of the dice for a couple $100 or whatever your budget is. But it's just nuts, because if you win on them, you know, you basically need to win a few of them to pay off the whole thing, because I don't know. I don't know how you would pick just a couple of those if you were all going to do a couple of prop bets. You know, how do you know which ones are going to work out in your favor? You'd have to do a handful of them just to make sure you got your money back. I'm a little more old-fashioned. I like to just watch the Super Bowl and not necessarily gamble on it. But this year I did do a little pool at our party, and we had everybody picked squares, and it was a lot of fun. But it's just interesting, because you basically spend the whole time wondering, you know, wishing for the score to go a certain way, not necessarily for one team to do well or one to not do so well. You kind of lose sight of what you're rooting for. It's kind of like fantasy football, you know. I'm a Green Bay fan, so it's just really interesting, you know, if I'm playing a guy that's got a, you know, Aaron Rodgers or somebody, and I really don't need them to score any points because that's going to lose the game for me, but I need a Rodgers to throw a touchdown to beat whoever they're playing. You never want to be in that position. You don't want to be rooting against your own team. It's a really strange situation where you find yourself telling Rodgers not to throw the touchdown, which you should never say. And it's just interesting. So that was our fun little thing at the Super Bowl. Didn't win any money. Didn't really lose any money, but didn't win any money. And it was a fun way to keep track of how the game was going after the fact. You know, it was all fun and games when everybody's kind of had a couple beers, and then you wonder, you know, what was the score at halftime? And then you got to look it up, but, you know, you're a little behind because you've been watching the commercials and pausing for bathroom breaks, so you don't want to check it and, you know, find out you missed something, and find out something you're not supposed to know. But at the same time, you want to know the score to see if you've got any fresh cash in your pocket. It's a really interesting situation. So it was the Super Bowl, and that's over now. So we're on to next year. The Winter Olympics start on the 9th, so this weekend. And so we've got that going for us. And if you haven't seen I, Tonya, you should go check that out, because that'll probably give you a little more glimpse of what the Olympics are like, or not like, I guess, depending on your scope. Plus, you know, she's from Portland, so whether you like her or not, it's a fun little movie about someone who's from the area, so just fun to know about her, yeah, whether you like it or not. And yeah, a lot going on. You know, there's some basketball games going on this weekend, and Blazers are going to finish out their schedule next week, and then they'll be on break throughout the weekend next week, and then back in action, and hopefully better than ever. You know, they came out of the All-Star break last year just pumped and ready to show Nurkic off to the world, and I guess we'll have to hope that somehow they come out with that again. And if not, then they'll just be who we thought they were. And if they come out and they throw a couple of knockout punches, they even better. We'll cheer them on either way. But we'll sure would be fun to see them go on a deep playoff run. It's been a long time. So that's all we have for you guys tonight. So thanks for checking us out. This has been Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. Thank you. Stay classy and stay tuned.